Hello, everyone, and welcome to Zion's Finest. This is Kenny Brown, and I am joined by two of my brothers, Scott Paul and Samuel Kay. We are going to be giving some preliminary thoughts on Sabotage Showdown, as well as talking about a recent tournament that we had here in Utah that happened yesterday. If my voice sounds a little harried slash hurried, it is because there is a non-zero chance that my wife is going to be giving birth to our fourth child. So if I have to duck out and run, you guys will know why. And then Sam and Scott will continue to run the show. Nothing too exciting happening over here. Just again, we encourage everyone to join the Slack, rate and review the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube. Give it a thumbs up. Please fill out the Google form. If you're on the Slack, fill out the Google form and I will send you a promo card. The first tranche have all been sent out. We also got them to everyone overseas except Gauz, David, and Jess. I am sorry, yours got sent back. There was some, I think it was just an problem with how it was packaged. It's just like a rigid envelope. So sorry about that, guys, because they also had the ones that were going to be distributed to other people in the UK. So those will be going out. But you want a promo, fill out the form on the Slack and I'll get it sent out to you here in a little bit. We'd also encourage you to fill out the Google form that is also pinned in the general channel so that we can continue to get data on games that are being played. I have not filled it out in a few weeks and I need to make sure I get all of my games logged. Content creator roundup. Again, Rogue Support, they did an awesome podcast. For those of you who are familiar with Rogue Support, which I assume most people in the Shatterpoint scene, podcast scene are, they are also very familiar with MCP. And what they did for this episode was they spitballed some ideas about a WTC for Shatterpoint. WTC is this big, it's like the world's for MCP. It's in Europe. I think it's in Amsterdam. The Hello There brothers both went. Jesse and Amon went, and I think they did very well. So it's a really cool event, and obviously, you know, we would love to see something like that for Shatterpoint. So Rogue Support talked about that. Hello There's released a few episodes. They did an episode talking about secondary units, and they also did this really great. So Morgan Reed won the TTS League. If you have played X-Wing, that name will be familiar to you. Well, I'm sure if you've played lots of games, I know him from X-Wing. Morgan Reed played X-Wing. He was an extremely good player. And so it felt like a blast from the past to hear that he had won the TTS League, it's awesome. And his list was very interesting. It's not Ahsoka Dooku. It's Dooku, it's Vader. And so I have now thought about this. I think the premier list building strategy, in my opinion, is there's the two distinct list ideas, but I think what I'm seeing a lot of people run is core Vader or core Dooku or maybe core Maul. And the idea there is that Vader is going to be in every single one of your premier games, and so you build around that, or Dooku is going to be in every single one of your premier games and you build around that. Morgan did a core Vader list and ran everything to make work with Vader, and it was very funny. I think his primary list was Vader, Jango, Arfs, and then like his Dooku list was Dooku, Barriss, Magnus, which when you think about it, that's a pretty brilliant idea in terms of what he's trying to do there. It's a very cool list, and you should listen to him talk about that on the Hello There podcast. Momentous Struggle released an episode giving their preliminary thoughts on Sabotage Showdown, which we're going to be dovetailing because we're going to be talking about that as well. But check them out. Those guys are awesome. And then Jedi's Order, one of whom, Patrick, I played over the weekend, who is such a cool guy. They did an episode on Queen Padme, of which I'm with the two Padme stands of our podcast right now. So
yeah.
So it's a great episode. And they're also just really cool guys. Okay. That's the introduction. Let's do our recent game summary. Scott, take it away.
Cool. So I'll just speak briefly to my three games at the tournament. So I was running Vader, Grievous, Mother, Talzin, and Maul as my four premier primaries. My first game, I ran the Vader Grievous suite, Vader Grievous, Jango, Obi-2, Fifth Brother, and Magna Guards. I went up against JK, who was running Garsax or Mother Maul, kind of that pairing as well. So Talzin had Savage and Night Sisters, Maul had Jango and Clan Kreese. This is the single quickest game of Shatterpoint I've ever played. It took about 40 minutes. I went through my deck once, did not even shuffle, because it ended on my seventh turn. I made three attacks, two of which were with Obi-2, and one of which was a ranged Grievous attack. And it was so quick because I took positions that JK could not take back. That was the result of both not great dice luck on his side and pretty okay dice luck on my side. I had, with one exception that I reserved, had really good activation order. His activation order did not serve him at all. And I was able to one-shot multiple characters with Obi-2, kind of doing his max damage. And so I won struggle one very quickly in basically three turns. Struggle two, JK gets two options to pick, both of which I control two of the points already on either one. So basically he goes with Django, who is literally camped at one of the points, the only one he controls. So he's sort of forced to not really get to use Django for much other than making an inconsequential shot. So he takes that point. Then I just take that point from him, score 4 points. He's not able to take any points back. I then score another 4 points, and it just snowballed and was really, really a lopsided match. And a lot of that was luck. There were some maybe decisions that could have been different. He did forget one of Mother Talzin's activations after being wounded. I wounded the Clan Crease Mandos, and she would have gotten a dash out of it.
Yeah.
So there were a couple things there, but I will attribute that very much to he just didn't, the dice didn't swing his way, and the order deck was not his friend. And
yeah.
Vader Grievous is just really, really powerful. And it was a lopsided matchup that became even more lopsided because of it. My second match was against Justin, and this was a super close match that I lost due to a really stupid error that I made. So I was running Mother Maul, very similar to JK's list, except I'm running Gar Saxon and Super Commandos with Maul. Justin runs Dooku Luminara. So he's got Dooku, Django, Magna Guards, classic, Luminara, yep. Obi-2, Super Commandos.
Yep.
So we are going back and forth trading struggle. Like, we would go 3 points, 3 points, 3 points, 3 points, 3 points, 3 points. He's gaining some momentum that I'm not, but it is super even. Eventually, through some play with my Super Commandos and Savage taking a sneaky point, I am able to get some extra momentum. It gets to the point where he is not able to take a point back when he scores two. I am positioned that I only need 3 points in order to win. I am guaranteed to win this struggle one. I have 3 cards left to activate. I have 3 of my 6 force. I have Super Commandos come up, and I go, well, I don't know that that's my favorite activation. It doesn't really matter because I'm guaranteed to win this struggle. But I only have 3 force. I know struggle two is going to be difficult. I don't really want to reserve them in this scenario. So I opt not to reserve them and activate them because I think I can get some wounding in and set myself up well for struggle two. The mistake that I made that was really dumb is I didn't think about the fact that Django was within 3 of them and they only had 2 health left. So he, not so fast me, wounds the Mandalorians. So not only does he now take the point that I was previously holding, but because of Luminara, when he wounds an enemy character, he gets to perform a dash. So he has one of his Mandalorians dash onto my back point, and it's a huge point swing.
And that is a cool swing.
It then becomes that he is guaranteed to win struggle one. We continue playing. I win struggle two. It goes to basically time in struggle three because we hit mission critical. And it was just brutal. Just a complete misplay on my part that led me to lose that game. That we sort of chatted about it, Justin and I, afterwards, and he feels that if I had won that first struggle, it would have been incredibly hard for him to pull out a win based on just the way things were positioned. So I really stole my own glory, shot myself in the foot, and he capitalized on it, and Justin's a great player, so that isn't
yeah, he is.
Not at all a he lucked at anything, he capitalized and he made smart plays and good positioning. Then my final game was very, very similar to my first. I ran my Vader Grievous list. My opponent ran Vader with Mace. So it was Mace okay. with the Pawns and Arcs, and Vader with OB2 and 501st. This was the only match we played Sabotage Showdown. The other two were both shifting priorities. And very similar to the first one, I scored a bunch of points and took Struggle 1 in 3 or 4 turns. Just moving in, having lots of movement, having lots of ability to just ignore attacks. My opponent did one misplay where he decided to shoot OB2 with a Pawns attack that I mind-tricked instead of going to take a point that he could have taken. And so I was able to take one incredibly quickly. And then Struggle 2 was a little bit of back and forth where he'd come to take the point, I'd come take it back and forth a little bit until Fifth Brother activated. So I think we went maybe 9 rounds, 9 activations each. And so just again, kind of I just have the nuts and bolts to grind you down and be really powerful and have more effective stuff. So a really great tournament, really fun, went 2-1. Heartbreaking for me. I hate if my opponent just outplays me and beats me or the dice, that's one thing. But if I make a stupid mistake, I'll just kick myself all day long. So I will have to replay Justin and redeem myself.
Crush him. Just kidding. I love Justin, and he is a great player. Okay, Sam, give us your recent game summary.
Yeah, so I played 2 games this past week. One was at our local store. Played with my brother-in-law, Rob. We had a release event there. I played a non-optimal Vader Grievous list against Ahsoka Maul. And
okay.
Took that game off me. I played Kalani with Vader Grievous and no Jango, and his very first activation was Gar, who was able to get in range to the assistance of an Ingress point to blast Kalani, very first activation, and he like pinned me. I got stuck way back there, and then Kalani didn't activate till forever, so all my droids weren't in range. Kalani was useless the entire game. Which that is what won him the game, essentially. And then I played in the TTS League, where I played Dooku Grievous against General Obi-Wan and Mace Windu. And that was a really close game on the new mission. I won in 3 struggles against a really great opponent. His name's Joe. It was a really unique game in the fact that it became a fight around a singular point, because I was able to get Grievous up on one of the central points in a spot where nobody else could contest it, and he couldn't get Grievous off. And so all of our models got concentrated on the other side of the board, and it just became a slugfest where Mace was wounding my secondaries in a single shot, but I was just throwing bodies back on there to swing the points, which allowed me to get Struggle 1. And then Struggle 2 was more one-sided in his favor. He won it relatively quickly. But Struggle 3, he ended up being out of position to really contest it well, because I had gotten his General Obi-Wan out of the way with a Jango activation that made Obi-Wan inconsequential for the rest of the game. He was pinned, he was off the point, he was out of force, and so Obi-Wan couldn't get back to score anything. And the best thing that his Mace could do, he got a shatter point and he shatterported Mace, and he had to try and take out my Dooku, which I still had force available, so he couldn't get it done. He still did like 7 damage, but I did enough to keep Dooku alive, and that was basically it. It was a good game, though. I'll talk more about it when we talk about our thoughts on the mission, but it was really well played. It was a ton of fun.
That's awesome. I have played since the last, so I played three games on Sabotage Showdown. I'm only going to talk about my most recent, which was I played yesterday. I only played one round in the tournament because my daughter had a dance recital and I had to take off a little bit early for that. I played Patrick Whiting. So Patrick is one of the hosts of the Jedi's Order podcast and is a super awesome guy. Just a very, very good opponent. And holy smokes, this guy is a craftsman with respect to his Shatterpoint swag. He custom prints everything. He had printed multiple tables of terrain that were beautiful. Like he had the Ewok table and he just had some really cool pieces. And you could tell that was something that was very important to him. He had a very cool carrying case. He just has all the swag and he has made all the swag. And he's just a cool guy. So we actually, our lists, it was a premier format event. I was running Ahsoka, Dooku, Vader with Rex and Arfs, and then Maul. And I knew I was probably only going to play in one or two rounds. And so my idea was just to play Ahsoka Dooku. And then I actually wanted to try Vader Dooku. So Vader, Rex, Arfs, and then Dooku, Jango, Magnus, obviously. And I was not able to play that because across the table, so Patrick is running Ahsoka. He's running Ahsoka. He's running Lumi. He's running Dooku. Yeah, he's running... I'm sorry. Yeah, Ahsoka, Lumi, Dooku, Vader. So I'm like, well, if he's got Vader, I am going to want to bring Ahsoka. And if I'm bringing Ahsoka, I've got to bring Dooku because I'm just going to need that kind of consistency on the table. So, but he ended up playing Lumi and Vader. And so it was very interesting because he's running the Lumi list that he's running is kind of like what Justin's been running, where it's Lumi Mandos is the idea. And it's super cool. And it's something that I definitely want to test out. Our game wasn't super instructive. We did play on Sabotage Showdown. It wasn't super instructive because Patrick's dice were the worst dice I think I have ever seen in a game of Shatterpoint. I am very reluctant to ever talk about how a game was decided by dice or, you know, oh my heavens, like the dice decided this game. There's nothing any player could do. I am rarely going to do that. In this case, however, just to give you a little bit of flavor, so in three consecutive attacks, Patrick rolling 7, 8, 9 dice, never rolled. He was rolling 4 or 5 failures on every single one of those rolls. So, you know, 3 attacks in a row, he does absolutely nothing. And I mean, at that point, it was kind of it. So, I mean, he was such a good sport about it because I would have been melting those dice down and throwing them into the fire. But he was a super good sport about it. It was a really cool game. And it did give me a chance to explore a little bit more with Sabotage Showdown, which we're going to be talking about, but not really a whole lot more illustrative than that. So, Scott, let's talk a little bit about the format of the tournament, what was brought, what did well. We can parse the results a little bit, and then we'll give some thoughts on Sabotage Showdown.
Absolutely. So, generally speaking, so we had 10 players that arrived, 3 of which did have to drop partway through, one of which was Kenny, the other one were Matt and JK. Yeah, so we had about 10 players. It was a great turnout for what was functionally kind of a casual tournament event for a birthday for a 14-year-old who is a great Shatterpoint player. It's Justin Sun Taylor. Really, really good kid with strong Shatterpoint skills. He and his dad went to top table, played against each other. So really cool event for him to turn 14 at. So in terms of what the most common primaries were, we had a lot of Vaders, we had a lot of Dookus, a couple Luminaras, which was a really interesting thing to kind of get to see them played by people who believe in her and can demonstrate her value. I learned a lot in my game with Justin particularly. I stand by her statements that her heal isn't great, her damage is pointless, but the ability to wound something and get a movement or just heal off anyone. I think for me, Luminara, I saw her paired with Dooku. I think pairing her with Vader is not necessarily where she shines. I get the high idea of like if he's wounding people, then you're getting a lot of value out of that extra movement. But being able to cheat out extra movement is definitely her strongest aspect. And so that was interesting to see most things. I think she pairs really well with Dooku. We also saw some droids. It was a really even mix. I don't feel like anything was overly or underly represented. And so just real good mix. We saw a couple Cad Banes, and so just a real good mix of lists. I think Matt was the only one who was running something really Republic centric, where that was kind of what he was bringing as the keystone of what he was doing.
Tiffany Thiessens, I don't know this. I'm sorry, Tiffany, if I'm mispronouncing your last name, but she was running Obi-Wan, Padme, and then Mama Maul. So she was running this dual strikeless list, which I think was the other. That's the only other. It might be the only other Obi. Too. It is the only other Obi-Wan. So that was the only other person who was committed to running the Republic.
Gotcha. And I believe Tiffany was the other one who went 2-1 on the day. So
yes,
really must have been very successful. I know her final table had a really long game against Patrick. And
oh, okay.
They were having an interesting play there. So we saw a really solid mix of everything that we were doing. Top lists. So we saw some strong. So Luminara Dooku won the day, played in two matches. We saw Separatists with Dooku Grievous do really well. Vader Grievous did very well, going 2-1, and Dooku Maul doing super well. So all of those were kind of like the best performing lists. But
yes,
like I said, really, really diverse, healthy spread of things. The only thing we really didn't see, we did see Dooku Padme as well, that did very well, but the only thing that was really missing was a lot more of the Grand Republic. They were very much scattered, sort of used as like the off squad, and we didn't see a lot of bounty hunters other than Jango and a little bit of Cad Bane, but that's just not a super common pairing. General thoughts, that was my first premiere event, and I learned a lot about how I feel about premiere events, and I will say that the answer is conflicted.
Really?
Yes, because generally speaking, I don't like the idea that game balance should be addressed via tournament format.
Because that's interesting.
That is what I think, because the virtue of the premier format is that you can't just run the best list every time.
Yes.
And what my experience was, and I think Mother Maul is a perfectly fine list, but I really regretted running Vader Grievous against JK because of how well it performed, and then having to go into my second match against Justin with a strong list and say, well, I can run Vader plus something, or I can run kind of my second list so that I can go into my third with whatever I want.
Yes.
Having to make that calculus, I felt like I was punished for not knowing information I couldn't have known, which is what my future opponents are going to be. And so Premiere, the benefit of Premiere is that it kind of forces you to as evenly distribute your pieces and your Premiere squad. So if you top load one and say, well, I've got just the screws and the greatest thing as this one strike force, but that means I'm taking kind of a crappy one that I'm going to be forced to play with, then that is a risk you take, and that's on you. But I'm just not a huge fan of the idea that, well, we're not going, like, that's how we balance the game. That's how we make it so there isn't just one list that everybody takes. I think that the premier format should be a fun variation that doesn't have the burden of balancing the game on it. And I will say that, secondly, what I really appreciate about sort of the similar format in MCP is that you have a roster that you can take whatever you want, and you always have the selection of all of your things are available to you, and you are getting to select to try and best match your opponent and match the circumstance of your match based off of the mission. And I much prefer that because I want to be able to run the thing I want to run. I don't want to feel forced into running something in a way that I cannot anticipate. I don't know who my round two opponent is going to be. I don't know who my round three opponent is going to be. And it's one thing to say, hey, I know that Ahsoka Dooku's on the horizon in this tournament, so I need to not play Vader Grievous against them. So I'll play them now and save my other stuff for later. So that's one thing, but you don't have access to that information in a tournament. You don't get to see what everybody's stuff is. And if they do provide that information to you, depending on how big the tournament is, it's like, great, I have 64 people. I have no ability to determine, especially because I don't know what my first game is going to be, if I'm going to win or lose. So I feel conflicted. I think it's a fun format. I am not super excited if it is the only format that competitive scenes experience.
What do you think about that, Sam?
I like Premier format. I agree that I don't want it to be the only way to experience competitive events. One of the things I really like about the TTS League is that the beginning portion of it is open lists, very much kind of standard play, and then the top cut is Premier. So in this event, you're getting to experience both parts of the game.
Yeah.
That's something I really appreciate, and I don't want every in-person tournament I go to always be Premier. I think that there's a good place for having a mix of both types of events.
Yeah, I really love the format in terms of, I think mostly because I like the idea of not just being able to run good stuff, but I think Scott's right that you can't rely on the format in order to be the thing that solves the meta problem, because then it just leads to too many... If the problem is that you're using the Premier format in order to make sure that Vader Grievous just doesn't win everything, right? Or Vader something doesn't win everything. The problem with that is that then you're going to have these, you can have these super binary matchups in tournaments like Scott's talking about, where it's like, we're all running Vader Grievous. Who is the one who mistimes when they're going to run this other list? And maybe a part of that is that if the power level and the distribution is not so severe that it's like, well, you know, that's kind of knowing the matchups, right? That is part of building for the format. But I think you're right. You can't rely on that. Can't solve the meta's problem. I love it just because I like the idea of having to not run good stuff all in one list. You're having to distribute what you think are the problem solvers for all of your different lists. So if you're running core Dooku, it's Dooku, Jango, Magnus. And then the idea is, what are the problems that I need this list to be able to solve? So if I need to be able to control damage, I run Ahsoka. If I need to be able to do damage, I run Grievous, right? There's just a lot of really cool things that can happen there. But I totally understand what you're saying, Scott.
Yeah, and it's made me think differently about how I would build a Premier list. I think I would tune down Vader Grievous in order to spread the love a little bit more. I really want to try a Vader Grievous, Dooku, and then something else, maybe Maul in that fourth slot.
Yes.
But the problem is really not Vader Grievous. And this is, I think, we've talked about this and kind of flirted with this. Vader and Grievous are really powerful primaries. But there are a lot of, you know, we have an S rank and an A rank according to our tier system. Dooku is also an S rank. There are also other A ranks.
Yes.
Maul is a fantastic primary. Vader Grievous is
Maul's
not
so good.
Vader Grievous is not invincible. It has counters. Yep. We have spoken about those. The issue is just, and I experienced this against Justin, your secondaries are just not going to be as good as Jango and Obi-2, and you can only run them in two squads. And they're the real problem, I think, because they just...
Yeah.
The Luminara, one of the things that I had with her that I experienced was, Luminara is totally great when you're running her with Obi-2 and Jango, because they're great. They make any...
Yeah.
They make any primary good because they're just good.
Yeah.
And what they enable 100%. Is super powerful. So you're punished for having to go up against. So in that way, I guess Vader Grievous, if they're really, really good primaries that work really well together, you kind of have to not take Jango and Obi-2 and you have to kind of spread them out so that you've got some of your heat and thunder spread out across all of your strike forces. And it's just an interesting conundrum. And again, I think I love the way Sam described the TTS, that we're doing showdown for the regular season and then the top cut, that's Premier. I think that's an
interesting, I like that idea.
Yeah. And maybe if we have a big tournament, that's the way we should do it. We say 3-round Swiss and then 3-round top cut for 8-4-2.
That is a really cool idea. Here's a question. Sam, in TTS, are your Premier lists locked in ahead of time, or is it you're doing showdown, and then once the top cut happens, now we send in our Premier lists?
Once the top cut happens, now you send in your Premier lists.
That's cool. That's very cool. Yeah, it's a really interesting format. I like it, at least right now. I'm a big fan of it. Because what really I think that what I like about this as a miniatures game, having never had this in the miniatures games I've played in the past, which are IA and X-Wing, is the ability to feel like you kind of have a sideboard. And that that's really fun in terms of thinking about, I'm not going to be deploying this all the time, but if I need to, you know, I'm going to be bringing it out. But it is the case, I think, this is why I think the core idea is so good, Core Vader or Core Dooku, because I think that helps you avoid a lot of these binary matchups. But also, we haven't really played in enough big things in order to figure this out, so we'll see. More games will be played.
Yeah, so Sabotage Showdown has been a ton of fun from the few games I've played. I've really enjoyed it. But it offers a much different problem, I think, than whatever the other one's called.
Shifting priorities.
Because of Struggle 1. Struggle 1 is the majority of the game. Still. Struggle 1 is still very important. But the fact that the middle objective is never active Struggle 1, I think creates a very different dynamic. It kind of bisects the board. And because there are two back points active on each side, your ranged support units feel a bit more impactful.
Yep.
Because it feels like they can stay back without and score you points and defend those points without having to... They can score points without risking the midline...
Yes.
The midline damage, the midline attack back. That's what I'm going for. That like brute force attack back can just one shot them. They can I'm gonna sit back, gonna try and push people off with my attacks, still score points. In that regard, it feels to me like it's a better mission for Galactic Republic than the old mission. Like if I'm playing Galactic Republic list, I want to bring this mission.
Yes. I think that's right. It's, I will say that Matt also has very similar thoughts. Do you want to run down what the... I mean, obviously, we don't need to go card by card here, but do you want to talk about the three phases in terms of what the spread looks like?
So Struggle 1 is always the same. So you have this circle, essentially, where you have two backline points for each side, and the two of the midline, there's 3 points in the midline. Either end of the midline is active Struggle 1.
Yep.
In Struggle 2, in the three different setups, no matter what, there will always be a backline point active on either side.
Yep.
So you're always going to want to leave somebody back there to start Struggle 2 contesting one of your home points.
Yep.
And then there will always be one of the midline points active. Most of the time, it'll be the center point, but not always.
Yeah.
We can break down more of the individuals later, but that's just kind of like the general overview of what Struggle 2 looks like. Backline point, one center point. Yep. Struggle 3 is either going to be a straight line down the center or a very spread out triangle, where you're going to have the far end of the midline and the two furthest backline points from it will be active. One interesting thing about Sabotage Showdown is that because there are only 8 objectives, it is easier to be set up to be scoring for the next struggle, just because there is one less point that you have to be fighting over.
Yep.
So you can really there's the possibility to snowball these struggles from the very beginning faster than in the other mission.
I have sort of two general takeaways from Sabotage Showdown. One point being that, at least for Struggle 1, the game moves much faster because there are just more points available. The general ratio is 3-2 in shifting priority.
Good point.
That you are basically saying, hey, one of us is going to control 2, one of us is going to control 3. It is imperative on your turn that you take one of the 3 points so that we're having an even exchange. And then the break point is when someone fails to do that, the other person can try to score 4 or just score 3 with a plus 1. So basically, you're trying to get a plus 1 or a plus 2 advantage. With this game, you're dealing with 4 and 3, which the same trade is available because you're still saying, well, I want to take a point, so we're doing 3 and 3 rather than 4 and 2. And then once you can't take that, then it becomes, well, I want to either score 4 twice in a row for a net 1, or I want to get 5. And that's kind of the same calculus, but it's just that the number of steps on the track does not change. And so the game just, the struggle one will go hypothetically, possibly faster if you're running certain lists. It is still absolutely possible to stall out and have a super long struggle one because you still are having that back and forth. And it's all about opportunities. It's just that with an extra active point, you can have a more profound swing that might reduce your struggle one by 1 to 2 activations per player.
Yeah.
The second takeaway that I think is interesting for me regarding Sabotage Showdown is that I agree that backline ranged attackers have received the benefit because they kind of hang back. And that's true. But that didn't come at the expense of melee units, because melee units also really benefit from the fact that everything is closer together. And going into the second struggle, it is not the case that maybe your melee unit, who is not super fast, is all the way over here in this corner, and they have no ability to affect the other points. You just have further, or you just have less far to travel in order for your melee units to be effective. And so OB2 is still amazing with it, and your melee units still get into the scrim really easily. So I think a rising tide lifts all ships, but melee didn't really need the help, and ranged did. So,
yeah, it's actually interesting, Scott, because I think that struggle one, I think it is, if I had to say, I don't think that melee took a huge hit, but that there isn't an active middle point is really interesting, because what it means is that your melee units do kind of have to split. They're not going to be able to apply pressure to that middle point in struggle one. And that does, I'm not saying that obviously it doesn't nerf melee units or anything like that. It's just something to think about. Like, you will be splitting your forces up. This is something that Matt noted, is that droids, Kalani, Kraken, what those droids are able to do is they might be the ones who most benefit from this, because they are able to apply this tempo pressure, you know, because they're able to play a range. They're able to take both of these points that are spread apart from each other and still apply pressure across the board. I don't know that that's the case. I haven't played on droids. I haven't played Kraken Kalani on this list yet, or on this mission yet, but that's just something to think about. I love how Struggle 1 feels in terms of the spread of the objectives and with the Shatterpoint abilities. I think it just adds a really dynamic feeling to Struggle 1, but that's just something that we've been talking about, thinking about.
I think the Shatterpoint abilities are very impactful.
Huge. Interesting. I didn't feel that they were super impactful. They're nice. They're really nice to have, but sometimes they're situational, depending on when your Shatterpoint comes up. Because, well, let's say I Shatterpoint, and the most effective use of my Shatterpoint has no damage or a condition. So my heal 2 damage or heal a condition is pointless. Or in my third game at the tournament, I Shatterpointed OB2 so I could get him out early, so I can have, you know, take a point and keep it, or, you know, use him to mind trick from other units. And I got a free dash. Where I wanted to position, OB2 could get there with his free run in advance. I didn't need the dash. And so there are times when just those abilities are not going to be impactful. The force refresh is by far the most impactful. That is huge.
When I have played, I have actually never seen the regroup come up. It has always been press forward or stick to the plan. And I have felt that both the force refresh and the dash, because, I mean, a lot of times what I'm using my force for is to dash units or to jump units around. And the ability to Shatterpoint my Clan Kreese units and have them both dash, then have them spend a force to jump. Wow, that just, it feels like you can really do a lot. So I'm not saying, obviously, it doesn't swing the game. It can absolutely result in a dud, you know, if you're not able to take advantage of it, because who you're going to Shatterpoint is who you're going to Shatterpoint. And press forward or stick to the plan might I press forward especially might change who you shatter point because you're thinking, oh, I want to get two dashes out of this as opposed to one.
Yeah.
But I felt it to be pretty impactful. What do you think, Sam?
Yeah, I agree that regroup is the least impactful of them. Yes. And the forest one is the most impactful, the stick to the plan. However, yeah. I think press forward is can be also just incredibly powerful.
It's, yeah.
It does so much, especially it can allow for some crazy... if it's your struggle one, you get some pretty crazy first activations where you can just rush up the board and snipe someone on the back line that they thought was going to be safe.
Yep.
Or if you got force pushed out of position somewhere, you're back in. There's a lot of application, I feel, for that one. Also, getting out of Django range.
Oh, it's so good.
Yeah.
Because it's a tactics ability. Get out of there before Django can, you know, shoot you up and stop you from activating. I think that that those two in particular are felt very powerful. The one where you heal is very situational, but fine.
Yeah.
The other two, I think, can really change a game.
Yeah. I guess I want to clarify my point in that I stand by my point. I'm not saving it, but I want to point out that what I was pointing out was not a negative. I think it's a positive.
Yeah, sure.
I think the change, the opportunity to change the game is minimal and based on specific opportunities, which is how I think they should be. I think that if every game, it's just, well, who got the Shatterpoint ability the
good
right
point.
Time?
Yeah.
No, it feels like a really nice to have. It's a boon that both players will hypothetically get. Technically, you may not get every ability because your Shatterpoint, the conflict may resolve and change to a different one before your Shatterpoint card comes up, so you'll get access to a different ability. But
yeah,
it's a cool addition. I think it adds some interesting additions to the game. I do think that the game still kind of fundamentally stays the same. I don't think Sabotage Showdown mixed up the game as much as maybe some people were hoping for it to. It's a nice change of pace. I like it.
Yes.
I think that there's virtue in playing it. I think that if there were maybe some different conditions around how you hold an objective, like if there was like, hey, during this struggle, you have to have two value of troop in order to control a point, or you have to, like, priority will be on two, you roll two dice and there are two priority objectives in this round, or that's probably too much. I'm just spitballing.
I think those are some really cool ideas. Like, and those would kind of fundamentally change how it works. I mean, if you had it to where you had to have two units on a point in order to contest it, that would fundamentally change the game, because now you can no longer, like, Fifth Brother, I think, fundamentally can't be played, right? Because his ability is that he is breaking ties with one unit, and you are going to need those second bodies everywhere, right? So they could absolutely do something like that.
He stops in that he is a fewer body, but he would break the tie. If you have two things there and your opponent has two things, he still breaks that tie. But
but like, absolutely. I mean, that... So it's just it is interesting to think about how things... I don't want, like, fundamental revolutionary change. I think Matt was hoping that this could maybe be the thing to save the Republic, which I don't think it does. I think it does even out the game a little bit, especially because Struggle 2 is, I feel like, a lot less swingy is the only way I can describe it, in that it feels like you are fighting along that central corridor. The two middle points on the front and back line are, that is going to be where you will obviously be having action, right? Because there's going to be a back point on one side and a back point on the other side that's always active. So that you're fighting along that central corridor means that you are really incentivized, even though the middle point is not active. You want to have your units able to contest along that lateral line. And so it's just and it has felt like, oh, Struggle 2 flips. And maybe this is a bad thing, because I have not seen when in my games that the loser of Struggle 2 is able to flip over the card for either we need more time, they're jamming our comms, or didn't expect a welcome party and think, oh, I can win the game now. Because of it just doesn't lend itself to that kind of a wild swing in terms of positioning and priority. So that's just my thought on it. And also, again, I've only played 3 games on this. We haven't played enough on the mission, but it does feel, I don't know, just like it feels like the next iteration that's more solidifying the game down is my thought on it.
Yeah, I think the idea of having Shatterpoint tactic abilities is going to become the norm.
Yes, agreed.
Yeah. I do like that there is not a choice for the loser of Struggle 2 in Struggle 3. Struggle 3 feels like, yeah, you lost Struggle 2 and you still have the advantage of being able to score first, but you don't get the double advantage of also being able to choose the active points.
Yes.
It feels like if you make it to Struggle 3, that it's still like could be anyone's game. Instead of like sometimes you make to Struggle 3, and it's just up, I get to choose, you can't contest these points, that's game.
Any advantage you have is because you have positioned anticipating what Struggle 3 will bring, as opposed to just by virtue of you got to pick it.
Yeah, which is what you want, right? This is what we've talked about. This is one of our actually our suggested changes for the problem that the winner of Struggle 1 tends to win most games. You know, and that's even above the 75% win rate that we would expect, is that they don't get, is that the winner doesn't get to choose the doesn't get to choose Struggle 3 in terms of how it breaks out. And this does that. Now, obviously, it is a matter of positioning, and positioning is, you know, that's going to be something that people are going to be able to leverage to their advantage. But I just think it is a much more, like, you look at those heat maps of the distribution of where, which points are going to be active. It just makes it so you're thinking, you need to really be thinking about that, because that is going to be where you gain your advantage. You're not going to be able to pick, you know, where what's going to happen in Struggle 3. So I really love that feature of it. Absolutely.
100%. I haven't found any lists that particularly are better or worse. I think that probably Republic is better on Sabotage Showdown, as for the reasons you described. But, you know, better than bad is probably still not amazing. And I think certain Republic lists probably go from good but under tuned to like actually competitive, because there's some Republic lists that are, you know, perfectly competitive against most things, that this probably gives them an edge that maybe evens the playing field. And honestly, we'll have to have an episode where Matt can speak to it, because, you know, in his crusade to make Grand Republic work and viable and as competitive as anything, he'll be probably the best person to speak to that.
Agreed. I mean, I am interested in the Padme players, what the Padme players think is going to be happening with us. Have either of you played with Padme on the new on Sabotage yet?
No.
I haven't yet. But my thought on one of the Padme strategies / Grand Republic strategies on this new mission, especially Struggle 1, you can put your supports so they're contesting both your back points and they're split up. Yes. That means that your coordinated fire from your supports will cover the entire midline as long as they're forward on those back points. You'll be able to get your coordinated fire from either support as long as one's contesting one point, the other's the other, across the entire midline. You can just choose what you want for your effects. So it's easier to position for that.
Yeah, that is going to be a big deal if that's true. And as we've been looking at these cards, I'd encourage you to look at the cards in your mission pack if you have it. Because I'm thinking, like, where do I want to be positioning people so that I'm able to take advantage of where things split? I think round two, you want to be positioning along the center, even though I know it sounds weird because the center point is not active in Struggle 1, but you want to be ready to collapse because two of the three cards have the center point as an objective, and it is always the case that a back point is objective. But then when you're looking at the third cards, we have two triangles, one greater than, one less than sign, both with a back point, front point, middle point, and then to get to the hangar bay is all three are midline points. So it's, I don't know, like, I just think there's going to be a lot of gameplay and strategy regarding how you're going to be positioning units, and I think that units that are in reserve on the back line, like the Handmaidens, are going to really be able to take advantage of the fact that because they're nestled in between, I'm just going to call this, what, B1 and C1, even though obviously our topography is not going to be mapping here. is that because they are in between those points, they are just going to be a lot more flexible in where they can go. So I could see that being pretty spicy. But yeah, we will have to play. We'll have to see. We'll have to, after Matt has some games with the Republic, we'll have to see what he thinks in terms of if he thinks it's enough. But I'm really excited to see how it turns out. So
same.
We want to encourage everyone to, again, join the Slack, rate and review the podcast, play games on Sabotage Showdown. Let us know what you think about it. Tell us if you think certain lists are prioritized or not. One other thing is, in addition to filling out the Google form for games that you play, it would be really awesome if people, if you're participating in tournaments, if you could let us know where those tournaments are happening, who is showing up. I suppose I could be doing a better job of checking Longshanks, and I should be doing a better job of checking Longshanks, but it would be really nice if people could just say, hey, just FYI, I played in like an 8-man tournament or something like that, just so we can have an idea as to what, not the competitive scene is, but what the organized play scene is looking like. And we can start workshopping ideas about how we can improve that. So that's just something I've been thinking about.
If you have an upcoming event, it may not be local to Utah, but if you're like, hey, I'm hosting an event in Seattle or, you know, New Orleans or New York or wherever, if,
yeah,
you know, if someone's listening here and that turns them onto the tournament, that might be good to call out. We'll shout it out.
Well, we have a lot of listeners in the United States. We have a lot of listeners in the EU. And the UK, and we would be very happy if you have a tournament that you would like a call out for. We would be very happy to do it. So just let us know, and we're happy to provide that information. So again, everybody, have a great week. Play Sabotage Showdown. Play Shatterpoint. We love you all. Have a good night.